This week, U.S. President Donald Trump addressed the joint session of Congress. He talked about the renewal of the American dream.
The American dream is unstoppable, and our country is on the verge of a comeback, the likes of which the world has never witnessed and perhaps will never witness again.
President Trump also discussed his efforts to end the wars in Ukraine and the Middle East, downsize the federal government, impose tariffs, and redefine the presence of America on the international stage. How will the U.S. administration's priorities affect Africa? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our viewer headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCorry. Since his second term in office began, U.S. President Donald Trump has issued over 80 executive actions, reshaping the way the United States relates to the international community. He's also initiating big changes in the federal government of the United States. Patsy Wida-Kuswara brings us some of the highlights from his speech.
President Donald Trump's Tuesday evening speech marks his first address to a joint session of Congress since he began his second term on January 20.
America's momentum is back. Our spirit is back. Our pride is back. Our confidence is back. And the American dream is surging bigger and better than ever before.
But barely 5 minutes in, the Democratic Representative Al Green of Texas began shouting that Trump had, quote, no mandate to cut Medicaid, the government aid program for medical coverage for low-income people.
Mr. Green, take your seat. Take your seat, sir.
Green was escorted out. Trump highlighted the steep tariffs he enacted Tuesday on China and U.S. neighbors Mexico and Canada. These top three U.S. trading partners have threatened retaliation, sending financial markets tumbling amid fears of a new trade war.
There'll be a little disturbance, but we're okay with that. It won't be much.
Earlier this week, Trump paused military aid to Ukraine, following last week's combative Oval Office meeting with President Volodymyr Zelensky over a deal that would give the U.S. rights to Ukrainian rare earth minerals. It's part of his efforts to press Kyiv to take a deal to end the fight against Russia's invasion of the country.
Simultaneously, we've had serious discussions with Russia and have received strong signals that they are ready for peace.
In delivering the Democrats' response, Senator Elisa Slotkin of Michigan highlighted Trump's fiery exchange with Zelensky.
And that scene in the Oval Office wasn't just a bad episode of reality TV. It summed up Trump's whole approach to the world. He believes in cozying up to dictators like Vladimir Putin and kicking our friends like the Canadians in the teeth. He sees American leadership as merely a series of real estate transactions.
Other Democrats signaled their protest while Trump spoke, wearing pink to call attention to Trump's policies they say negatively impact women and families, and holding signs including Musk steals.
Doge. Perhaps you've heard of it. Perhaps.
Referring to efforts by tech billionaire Elon Musk to slash federal bureaucracy by canceling government contracts and firing tens of thousands of federal employees.
Any federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp.
Again, the Democrats' response from Slotkin.
You want to cut waste? I'll help you do it. But change doesn't need to be chaotic or make us less safe. The mindless firing of people who work to protect our nuclear weapons, keep our planes from crashing, and conduct the research that finds the cure for cancer, only to rehire them 2 days later? No CEO in America could do that without being summarily fired.
Trump credited himself for the drop in the number of migrants illegally crossing the U.S. southern border.
The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation, we must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president.
Sitting with First Lady Melania Trump, were guests whose life experiences amplify her husband's agenda, including an activist against transgender athletes in women's sports and the family of a woman killed by an undocumented immigrant. Trump repeated his calls to take back the Panama Canal and take over Greenland, but not his demands to expel Palestinians from Gaza. He spoke for an hour and 40 minutes, the longest presidential speech to Congress. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
Well, that was VOA's Patsy Widakuswara. President Trump talked about the renewal of the American dream, but what does this mean for the United States? And how does this affect the allies? For more insight into these evolving realities, I'm joined from Johannesburg in South Africa by political analyst Marisa Lorenzo. And here with me in studio is Joseph Slavik, a partner at Scribe Strategies and Advisors. Now, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Joe, I want to start with you. You know, the president has done quite a number of things within a very short time. And some people look like they're kind of startled, but the president made certain promises during the campaign. Has he deviated?
No, I think he's pretty much stayed on target. I think, you know, in terms of immigration, at least trying to open up free trade or fair trade, I think those priorities have been pretty much dealt with. And of course, on Ukraine, I think the president was pretty clear the other day that he wants peace in Ukraine. So I think overall, the president and his agenda are clear. Not everyone agrees with it in Washington, but I think he's going to stay true to his desires.
Yes. Now, Marisa, obviously, the president has said it's America first. It's something he said during his first term. It's something he said during the campaign for his reelection for a second term. And from all the actions he's taking, obviously is keeping with that. Now, for those like on the continent of Africa, what is it they need to do to realign with this new reality, which is America is focusing on what makes this country great? How can African countries align themselves with this reality?
I think it's quite difficult for African countries to respond at this point, just because, you know, Trump has done so much since he took office, and we're not even 2 months in yet. But of course, you know, I think the biggest concerns that African countries have revolve around healthcare and cuts to aid that's specifically focused on healthcare programs. They're going to have to look to diversify funding streams, and they have to do that very, very quickly. I think also some African governments that are close to the US will hope that, you know, their bilateral trade agreements will stay in place, and they probably will. I don't think Trump would look to disrupt those necessarily, because as much as he wants to put America first, America cannot act alone in a globalized world. And then I think for African countries as well, for civil society, there is a challenge of the U.S. support for governance strategies, especially organizations that fought against government corruption and private sector corruption. They are also going to have to really look at diversifying streams very, very quickly.
Yes. And you know, Joe, this is not just about Africa. We've seen even the Europeans kind of try to come together and figure out how to proceed with this kind of new dispensation in Washington, where the president is saying, you know, you got to get your house in order. And this is a message to everybody out there. So what does this do to many who have looked to the U.S. for pretty much everything, security, maybe, you know, healthcare, and so on and so forth?
I think, look, if you're in Africa, you're a head of state in Africa, I tell everyone, there's two things going on with Donald Trump in Africa, and it's the two Ds. It's deals and deterrence. And I think those are, if you look at those two, we'll say titles are deals and deterrence. The president's looking to do deals in terms of oil and gas, infrastructure, and in terms of deterrence, I think it's looking at security. I think the president's approach is to avoid these multilateral major like UN peacekeeping missions where billions of dollars are spent. I think they want to probably work on kind of bilateral security assistance, but it breaks down to deals and deterrence. If you're an African head of state or a minister, you want to focus on those two areas. Yes. Under Trump.
And Marisa, some have said it's a wake-up call for African governance, you know, that you need to figure out how to save money, how to reduce waste and invest in the right places, like healthcare. For the longest time, many governments have literally ceded their responsibility to NGOs or programs that are funded by USAID. But is it time to start being more disciplined so that more money can be set aside for critical sectors like health?
I think this is a tough one because, you know, if we look at arguments for and against aid, this has been going on for decades, you know, where researchers and academics have said, you know, does aid harm more than it helps? And, you know, one of the harmful impacts of aid is something that you've pointed out now, which is, you know, does it make governments complacent? Another harmful effect of aid that has been pointed out is, does it help to prop up autocratic governments, you know, who don't have accountability, who don't have to have fiscal discipline? And I think, you know, that there is an argument to be made for, you know, the US doesn't have to keep giving aid for these reasons specifically. But I think that we also have to look at, you know, the US is a big superpower. It also uses aid as soft power to have some control over the African continent. And to, yes, they might, we might need to have reform of the sector, but he has done this very, very suddenly. For sure, you know, it's not just government, civil society organizations as well are also realizing that they did need to have more diversified funding streams and not become complacent. But yes. I think the uncertainty that this injects is tricky because, you know, we are going to see court orders in the U.S. that might roll back some of Trump's decision. He's pushing his executive powers to the limit now, but we don't know what's going to happen next. So it's also hard to react against what's happening now.
Sure. And quick. And Joe, you know, the model that the president has put out there, America first. Can Africa borrow from that, actually, or individual countries? Like, how can they advance their countries and the development in their countries if they adopted that kind of model?
I think transparency is going to be very important for a lot of these governments, African governments in particular. I do think that you're going to see U.S. aid flow quicker, but it'll be more focused and more direct. So I don't think, like I said, you heard the president last night point out, you know, about certain aid projects in Lesotho and Uganda and other countries. So I think what's going to happen is, and I've spoken to some U.S. ambassadors abroad, there is a real deep dive. Actually, the State Department is doing an internal audit on April 19th. There will be some announcements made. There'll probably be even some embassies in Africa closed that I'm hearing, where the U.S. thinks, doesn't feel that there's value for having buildings there. So I think there's going to be more accountability, transparency. I do think there could be some increase in aid in certain areas, but I think in terms of like LGBT, DEI and stuff of that, I don't, obviously the president's made that very clear that U.S. taxpayer will not be spent on that. But I do think from in terms of African countries, I think they'll have a better opportunity to coordinate with the U.S. on projects that that will say, to have priority and that are important to both governments.
And Marissa, you see, while you say the U.S. of course has this power and has the ability to kind of come to the rescue of African countries, I think what the president has been saying is also that level of discipline, that level of transparency. And when you look across the continent, that has been actually the big beef that some of the, especially younger generation, the so-called Gen Zs have with their governments. They say there's a spending on things that are not important. While here in Washington, the president is saying we're going to be cutting back on waste, on spending on things that don't have that much value to the taxpayers. And then yet we see on the continent, people complain that there's spending on things that do not advance the development of the people's welfare or the countries. So how can that message be made practical on the continent so that actually African countries can engage in a more meaningful way with the U.S.?
Oh, yeah, I don't think that African populations, I mean, yes, you're right that there are a lot of complaints, especially against government corruption. That's a big issue across the continent that does lead to a lot of popular frustration. But I'm not sure that Trump's message is really resonating in the same kind of way because, you know, Trump is not saying, we're cutting aid because, you know, we feel some kind of moral longing, you know, to kind of help these countries. I think he's also been quite rude about African countries. He was very rude in that speech last night, saying that nobody knows where the city is, for example. So, I'm not sure that his message is resonating quite in the same way.
We'll continue with this conversation, it's time now for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the address U.S. President Trump gave to Congress and what it may mean for Africa. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth, when we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
On the 8th of March 2025, International Women's Day will be celebrated under the theme For All Women and Girls, Rights, Equality, Empowerment. This year's theme calls for action that can unlock equal rights, power, and opportunities for all by empowering the next generation, especially young women and adolescent girls. On the next edition of Our Voices, we kick off Women's History Month by taking a closer look at the call to accelerate action. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
Welcome back. You are with Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA headquarters in Washington. We are discussing the key points of U.S. President Donald Trump's first address to Congress in his second term. I'm joined from Johannesburg, South Africa, by political analyst Marisa Lorenzo. And here in Washington with me in studio is Joseph Slavik, a partner at Scribe Strategies and Advisors. Now, Joe, you know, you've talked about the president being very focused on deals. He's a man of deals, and he said that. And when we look at the continent of Africa, it's a rich continent. It has minerals you can't even try to imagine what they could do to the continent. What kind of deals can African countries think at an individual level that could actually help unlock the potential of Africa, light up the continent, create opportunities for young people who are many times trying to leave the continent, when actually the continent is so well endowed with wealth?
Yeah, so getting back to the so-called deals and deterrence, as I call it, yeah. And that's kind of some of the language that's used around the president. I think in Africa, look, critical strategic minerals, oil and gas will be big. When you look at countries like Congo, you know, there's a conflict going on between Congo, Rwanda. I think that there's going to be an effort made there to calm the situation down. And I think there's going to be a way that the U.S. looks on how can certain minerals like geranium and other critical minerals, cobalt and others, how those assets can be secured, bringing peace, maintaining U.S. interests, and holding everyone accountable. I think, you know, if you look at the continent, there's been a lot of conflicts that really have been funded by the U.S., I mean, by the United Nations. Billions of dollars spent, and status quo remains the same. So I think the president's going to work hard on that. Infrastructure and energy are going to be massive projects. I think that, mm-hmm. I know certain projects were kind of defunded on solar, or Power Africa. But I think there's going to be a reapproach to all of that. And same thing in other countries as well.
Yes. Now, Marisa, you see, Joe has used the word being held accountable. I have to say that one time I was speaking to an official at the IMF, I won't tell you who, but what she said is that one of the challenges is to hold African countries accountable for the funds that they get. And it's almost embarrassing to hear that you need to be held accountable as a country, because countries sometimes don't seem to be responsible in how they're dispensing the funds that they get, either as aid or even grants. So what's your thoughts on that?
For sure. I think this goes back to what I mentioned about aid earlier. You know, there's been this argument for decades about, is aid harmful or is it helpful? And certainly if there isn't accountability, and aid does go missing or it doesn't translate into the programs or projects that it should, that's definitely an issue. And then, of course, there's a lot of corruption across the continent, and it is, you know, where a lot of revenues that should go towards capital spending, like infrastructure, do go missing. So, yes, I mean, for sure, I think there is an argument to be made about aid. There is an argument for Africa to be more self-sufficient. But, you know, there are programs, there are a lot of programs that do work. For example, ones that go towards healthcare to eradicate polio, ones that help us to respond to health emergencies like the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, these kind of short-term responses that are not necessarily linked to development of countries, these still have an important role to play in Africa with that support that we would get from the U.S.
Sure. And Joe, it's not that the president is giving up on Africa. You know, sometimes people get the sense that, oh, you know, the president is not talking much about Africa. We know he's only been in office for just a few weeks. We know that in his first term, he actually had some very significant initiatives on the continent of Africa. Yeah. And so what does that tell us about the future of Africa during the tenure of President Trump? Yeah,
look, I've been meeting with some of my, we'll call it Republican colleagues, both in the House, National Security Council, and others at the State Department. And getting back to the aid, I don't think aid will be cut. I think programs like the Yali Fellow will be increased. I think the president likes Yali programs where we're exchanging people. For instance, as you know, under President Bush, there was a large investment made towards dealing with HIV on the continent. I think those programs will continue to do very, very well. But some of these other projects that, like I said, voter confidence in Liberia and things of that nature, I think the U.S. is going to look at that and say, look, that's really not germane to what our relationship could be about. I think, like I said, it's going to be deals, infrastructure, security, exchanging of technology and knowledge. But I think, like I said, there'll be, a reprioritization of how money's allocated. But I think HIV programs like Yali will continue to do well. I think even programs like Voice of America, I think very important to the president. And I think you'll see Voice of America have a bigger footprint in Africa as well.
Great, we're excited for that.
Yeah.
Marissa, you know, one of the challenges sometimes when we are looking at Africa is that we talk about it as if it's a country. In many cases, some people, you know, don't realize we're talking about many countries that have different needs, different stages of development, different forms of, sources of, minerals and so on and so forth. Which countries at this moment, in your assessment, are better placed to work better with the U.S. at this juncture to realize some of the objectives of their own countries and perhaps overall benefit the continent of Africa?
So I would highlight three in this. The first one is Angola. So we've seen Angola since 2017 move away from its closer ties to China, even though it still owes it a lot of debt, and really nurture very close relations with the U.S. And this eventually culminated in a visit by then-President Joe Biden to Angola, the first time a sitting U.S. president has ever visited the country. And, of course, Angola is trying to develop the Lobito Corridor, which currently runs through to the DRC. They're looking to expand it to cut through Zambia as well. This is a very important project for the U.S. because if it had to take off to the stated extent, it offers the shortest route to get the DRC minerals like copper and cobalt, which are critical for the energy transition, out through the Atlantic and to the U.S. And it's absolutely essential also for the U.S. to reduce reliance on getting minerals from China. Angola is a very willing participant in this, and I think that the relations between the two are going to be fine going forward. The second one is the DRC, also with a very strong Chinese presence. President Tshisekedi is actually looking to dislodge that and really wants closer ties. He's lobbying hard in Washington. He's been doing so for the last 2 years behind the scenes. And then the third one that I would highlight is actually Mauritania. We know that there's been a lot of unrest and instability in the Sahel region, and Mauritania is really a country that, again, has tried to nurture close ties with the U.S. It's also trying to dislodge China in favor of the U.S., and what it would help is it would help the U.S. to have a kind of security presence within the Sahel region, which is now quite hostile towards Western involvement. Mm-hmm. And, of course, those are the main three, and, of course, there's always South Africa to think about as the most advanced economy in the region. I think the U.S. and South Africa will continue to have a very tense relationship going forward. I don't know if the U.S. can ignore South Africa entirely just because of its oversized role on the continent, but those three will be good, and then South Africa remains to be seen.
And actually, President Cyril Ramaphosa said recently he's, you know, waiting for a little time, and then he will send somebody to Washington to meet the president. So, Joe, your thoughts on that, and also perhaps just a little bit more on, you know, what how countries can position themselves.
I think Marissa did a good job kind of highlighting Angola. I think President Lourenço's leadership in Congo and the Lobito Corridor, you know, which goes through Angola, Zambia, and the Congo. And I think there could be a chance where Lobito Corridor gets expanded as well beyond the current footprint. With regard to Congo, I think, like I said, the Chinese have been in Congo. They probably came in under the days of President Kabila. And I think President Tshisekedi is working to diversify shareholders there. So I think you'll see China diminishment there. I think on the Sahel in general, I think the U.S. is going to revisit that. I think Morocco will be a big partner for the United States in terms of looking at how we can look at, as you know, we had our base that was closed in Niger. There was issues in Mali with regard to the government there, and you had the Jinan rebels, and you've got Russian and Chinese elements working there. So, and of course, I think in Uganda, you're going to see a reset there, where, as you know, the previous administration had sanctioned the Speaker of Parliament because of LGBT issues, and I don't think that this administration is going to, I think that you'll see some movement on that as well. But I think lots of opportunities, and on South Africa, you know, G20 is being held this year, and I don't know if President Trump's going to attend it. So
no, it happened, I think.
Yeah, well, they had it, but there's going to be, I think, another follow-up to that.
Follow-up to that this summer.
And I think I think it'll be interesting to see how the South Africans engage with President Trump. There's been some, you know, hot spots there.
Interesting. Yeah. And maybe finally, Marissa, we did mention China a little bit there. President Trump's approach. Does it? What does it do to counter the Chinese influence? Some people have really wanted to see more of an American influence on the continent.
Yeah, for sure. I think that some African leaders have been very good at kind of pitting China and the U.S. against each other. They know that, you know, geopolitics affects all of us, and that effectively they're trying to see, well, what can we get out of it? What can we get out of the U.S. desire for more critical minerals directly, you know, so it doesn't have to buy them from China and it can refine them in the US. And China, at the same time, it's been trying to secure its minerals future for decades now, and it's not going to let go of that easily. So it's a good time for African leaders to say, what's the best deal we can get?
Yeah. So, Joe, what do you think? China?
Yeah, look, I think the US is going to compete very heavily, like I said, on deals and deterrence. Yeah. And I think on the deal side, you're going to see the United States really focus on the, you know, we'll say infrastructure and aside from critical minerals, but there's a lot of energy opportunities. The Chinese have done a very good job. There's lots of allegations of corruption. And like I said, if you're an African country, needless to say, you want to have, you know, everyone competing for your interests. But I think the United States will be, I think under President Trump, there'll be a much more aggressive approach in terms of promoting U.S. interests. And there will be, as you know, we've created a new sovereign wealth fund to do projects. So I think you'll see this new sovereign wealth fund. Those resources will go to invest in to projects not only in the continent, and also when those minerals are taken out, they'll be brought back to the U.S. Because currently, a lot of the downstream is done in China.
Yeah.
So I think you're going to see companies like U.S. Steel and Cleveland-Cliffs and Freeport-McMoRan, large companies, have access to U.S. capital so that these minerals can be brought back to the U.S. And value added here versus in Asia.
Yeah, it looks like we're headed for very interesting times ahead of us.
Yeah, it'd be some very interesting realignments, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, we have to leave it here, Marissa Lourenço and Joseph Slavik. Thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.